From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
We can do a four leaders meeting in public. I'm not optimistic that it will really result in much, but it's a good way to kind of inform people through the media around the state, and I'm happy to do it. My experience, I know Speaker Madigan well and President Culleton. I don't think they're going to offer compromises or creative solutions in front of the media negotiation. I just don't think that's likely. But we can get issues on the table. We can have a good conversation.
The governor is saying that he doesn't expect a settlement at the earliest in January.
What about you?
I'm prepared to do a settlement today if everybody were reasonable.
It's a very strange economic strategy to try to hurt your economic engine. That's how you're going to grow the economy.
Well, unfortunately, in hearing the mayor's comments in Chicago, it sounds like he's trying to lay the blame for the failure of Chicago on other people, blame on Springfield. Unfortunately, that is not the case. Chicago has been fundamentally mismanaged for years, and the mayor in Chicago right now is forcing a massive tax hike.
That is Governor Rauner, and prior to that, we heard Mayor Rahm Emanuel of Chicago, and they were talking about the unwillingness for Mayor Emanuel to go along on board with the turnaround agenda of Rauner. Rauner criticizing their latest tax policy coming out of the city of Chicago. Early in the show, Governor Bruce Rauner speaking in the Quad Cities and House Speaker Michael Madigan in Chicago as they were talking about an upcoming meeting in the month of November about the budget. And we'd like to thank Rock Island Argus and WBBM News Radio in Chicago for contributing some of that audio to our show. We'll talk about those topics this week and more on State Week. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield, Brian Mackey with WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and he's steering the production side, but managed to get a microphone stuck by his mouth as well, and Amanda Venicky, State House Bureau Chief for WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, is sitting in the state capitol to chat with us. And good day. Hello, Amanda.
Good morning there, Bill.
Well, at long last, a meeting with the governor and legislative leaders together to talk about the budget, November 18th. Is that the correct date?
That is the correct date, and it looks as if it will be for a couple of hours held in the city of Chicago, not our fine state capital. At least that's the plan for now. We have basic agreement from all the legislative leaders that they'll be there, although House Speaker Michael Madigan says he still wants to see an agenda. It has gotten to that point. It's pretty unfathomable for a lot of people, I think, that the leaders and the governor haven't gotten together collectively since May 29th. And now, again, they all basically agreed to go to this meeting. But there's a power struggle about who's going to set the agenda, what's going to be on the agenda, and all of that. So it is really gotten to this beyond, obviously, as we've talked about on this program, and we'll continue to, the major divides in perspective and policy, but it really is personality as well.
I'm going to rewind just a second, though. Kind of interesting that the meeting, finally a meeting of all of them talking about the budget, It came because they got a letter from several good government groups trying to urge them to meet.
Exactly. And I spoke with the spearhead of that, Susan Garrett. She's a former state senator and now chairs the Illinois Campaign for Political Reform, and said that she had just been hearing from people time and time again, I don't understand. How aren't they meeting? We at least need to do something. And so this was a public letter that was sent out via press release. It was published in the Chicago Tribune. I'm guessing that was part of it. And also some of the impetus had to be that the governor himself was feeling that pressure and consistently asked, why haven't you met? What's going on there? You're the governor. How have you not called a meeting and gathered the troops? It depends on who you talk to, why that is, and what has prevented it. Is it that there have been a leader, murmurs that the speaker refuses to go, but then the speaker constantly says, I'm always willing to be cooperative, but never has anything really good to say about what happens at these meetings. The last time that they met, his comment was that there was no yelling. That was pretty much the speaker's takeaway. So, it was this letter, and there was a subsequent letter, as I noted, that is trying to now get things going or ensure that there will be a meeting now that there's been sort of a ruckus over who will set the agenda after the governor had said, hey, we appreciate the offer from you reform groups, but we're going to take it from here. And then the legislative leaders not being so keen, at least the Democrats, on the governor setting the agenda, fearful perhaps that it will be once again focused more on the turnaround than on the budget itself. And
right.
The reform groups say it should be budget based.
You could imagine that much like the governor's public appearances around the state, you know, he could have this agenda that would say, here's why businesses are leaving Illinois and what we need to do about it and things like that. Whereas you can imagine if the Democrats, based on these dog and pony shows the House has been putting on all year, these committee, or all summer, I should say, the committee of the whole meetings where they get human service providers and Sheriff Tom Dart from Cook County was there and all these different groups to come in and say how much the budget is affecting them. You can understand where neither wants to sort of cede the territory of who gets to set the agenda for this meeting. But I also want to touch on something else you said, Amanda, about the pressure here. I think that we can't underestimate that, because this is something that seems like, you know, the budget standoff is very abstract to a lot of people. A lot of people in Illinois aren't feeling it. But I think people understand when you say, wait, they're not even meeting as a group. Now, in the governor's defense, he says, you know, he is having individual conversations. He's on the phone every day, he says, with the Republican leaders. Senate President Cullerton had said earlier this year that he spoke at least monthly. I guess he and the speaker have been meeting or talking weekly now. But this idea that if they're not even talking about solving the problem, what the heck is going on? How are we ever going to get out of this if they're not talking about it?
To the outsider, that it defies common sense.
To the insider, too.
Yeah, really. Yeah. I mean, if you had a problem in the workplace that was that significant, you'd be having a meeting. Even if everybody was polar opposite in view, you'd at least be occasionally sitting down and yelling at each other, I would think.
Well, and this is kind of contrary to what past history has been in Illinois, because for years, the governor and the legislative leaders, particularly when there was divided government, when there was a Republican governor, Democratic majorities, they would sit down toward the end of the spring session and they'd hash out an agreement. And they'd say, okay, here's what I need. Here's what I won't give you. And how about you? And the other side would say, well, here's what I need. Here's what I won't give. And they'd find common ground and they'd come up with a budget that didn't please everybody but got the job done. So I could see this November 18th meeting as being productive if people would come in and, what's the way to say it, if they would put aside their ideology, and I'm speaking mostly of the governor, and try and work on things where there is some room for compromise. The governor's idea that we should do away with collective bargaining and that the way to make Illinois attractive to business is to basically break the unions, that will never sell with the Democrats. So he should kind of move aside from that, I think, and focus on things where there's room for compromise. Workers' compensation, unemployment insurance, reform of the civil justice system. Those are areas where in the past Democrats have been willing to negotiate and have been willing to give ground. And from the Democrats' point of view, they have to say, here are the taxes that we will support. And the governor, who's already said that he's all in favor of more revenue once his turnaround agenda gets taken care of. As I've said in other venues, this isn't rocket science. It's basically mathematics, and it's not that hard to do if you have the will to do it and if you get off the campaign trail.
Get off the campaign trail, and again, it all depends on who you talk to. Folks on both sides say that that's just what the other is doing, that Rauner is sticking to his guns, which he has, is, you know, we've reported on, long held these beliefs in terms of unions and what can make the state more competitive, that this is, he believes, the only way that he will be able to show that he's in charge. If he gives in now, that he will just be under the thumb of Madigan for years to come, as he basically seems to think previous governors were. And on the other side, that people say it's politics, period, Amanda. That if you don't allow that this is part of the game plan to buy Democrats, to make Rauner look weak, to make sure that they continue to have unions as their base, and that this was how it was going to play out from the onset, and that they weren't going to try and compromise until after the primary or until after the primary or until after, at the very least, petitions were turned in. That there was never going to be a compromise.
You could argue it the other way and say that it's Rauner trying to protect the fat cats, trying to protect the plutocrats, and that's why
he's
trying to break the unions. I mean, I look at it as just ideology, and this nonsense that Mike Madigan controls governors and he has them under his thumb. I've watched this up close for more than 20 years, and I would say that Jim Thompson didn't consider himself to be under Mike Madigan's thumb, nor did Jim Edgar, nor did George Ryan. They were people who were able to sit down and negotiate with the Speaker and the Democratic leadership in the Senate, get some things done that they wanted, but not to come in with a totally radical agenda, an anti-union agenda, as Rauner has done, and expect Democrats to roll over. I mean, that would be tantamount to the Democrats deciding, okay, we're going to impose a socialistic form of government in Illinois, and you, Governor, have to go along with it. I mean, that's just ludicrous.
I have two quick questions. You mentioned, Amanda, when you were talking, petitions for the primary. When does that all wrap up? What's a timeline for?
We've got another month left of end of November.
Okay. And then I was just interested in your take. I'm kind of a cynic and a skeptic, as you might have learned through knowing me through the years. When I saw that these groups sent that letter, I just kind of scoffed and said, oh, there's another pie-in-the-sky dream. Who's going to pay attention to that letter? But sure enough, they paid attention. So I kind of considered myself surprised on that one. How did you feel?
You know, I think this gets back to the pressure beyond that. These groups came in at the right time, and I think they also it's not a sort of goo-goo idea that only the quote-unquote do-gooders support. The business community wants resolution to this. The Republicans want resolution to this. Democrats want resolution to this. Everybody wants resolution to this, besides perhaps the leaders who aren't able to reach an agreement. And they each would say, yes, of course, we want one too. So it may have been a matter of timing and this pressure period for a meeting. And when something like that goes out and gets any sort of public attention, I think it would be the leaders and governor would be hard pressed to say, no, we're not going to meet. You know, that's, I guess, my take on it. And even all of this fuss about Speaker Madigan saying before he'll really commit to a meeting, wanting to see the agenda, particularly now that the governor wants to be the one that sets the agenda. I know that Madigan doesn't need to be elected statewide. He doesn't seem to give much of a hoot about how popular he is with the public at large. But I think he'll be hard-pressed, too, to not show up at this point, to say, hey, I'm not going to go because I don't like what we're going to discuss. And I should add something. This meeting is not just a typical meeting. When you look back in the past, these deals are behind closed doors. Instead, this one is supposed to be public. And we're not clear exactly yet on where it'll be, but it might well be at the City Club of Chicago, where they have room for, say, some 300 people, or it may just be in the governor's office. And it would be, however, live streamed with a press pool invited in. So there is some question, will this just be for show? The reform community, again, I talked to Susan Garrett, and she says, she was a former senator. She said, yeah, I know these are normally backroom deals, but what has that accomplished? We haven't seen any sort of outcome from these discussions. We want to see, what is the holdup? What is going on? How do these men and one woman, Redonio, interact together? What are they doing when they talk that is impeding any sort of solution?
Well, they weren't meeting at all as a group.
Exactly.
So that would be part of it. As a reporter, and I'll let the others chime in here, you like meetings to be open. Do you think that'll help or hurt any progress on this?
I mean, I do like meetings to be open. I think that's great from the standpoint of a reporter. It's always been, you know, one of the typical experiences of the State House press corps, at least until this year, was sort of towards the end of May, we would all go stand on the second floor of the Capitol outside the governor's office, waiting for the leaders. They would go in there. They'd be in their back room, you know, perhaps smoke-filled rooms at one point, not recently in the Capitol anyway, having their meetings. You'd have maybe the top budget experts from the Democrats and Republicans in the House and Senate meeting with the governor's staff, and we would all be sort of waiting out there. They would come out. They would update us. Yeah, we're making good progress. No, the other guys are idiots. Whatever they would say, they were in there. They were meeting. You knew to wear comfortable shoes. And the sort of lack of that happening this year, I think, has been surprising to a lot of us. And as we've said, it just sort of defies common sense. How can you possibly resolve your differences if you're not meeting? On the other hand, what we've heard about the meetings that have happened are that people aren't really offering to move, at least in ways that the other side perceives as reasonable, right? So we've heard the governor this week saying, look, my turnaround agenda at the beginning of the year included these local right-to-work zones, which he calls empowerment zones. It included prohibiting lawyers who deal with tort, you know, injuries, medical malpractice, so-called trial lawyers. It would have prohibited them from donating to judges. And I took those things off the table. But as somebody said earlier, I mean, those demands were viewed as so out of line with what the Democrats would ever go along with, that I don't think the Democrats really view that as, you know, that's just kind of like facing reality, not actually just, you know, conceding something that you were ever going to get.
It is, you know, you're right, Bill, because as a reporter, you always want to embrace openness and transparency. We talk a lot about that. That said, I'm not sure how candid any of these people will really be, especially as far apart as they are. And maybe they need to let loose. They're not going to do that in any sort of public forum. This was a request by the speaker, I believe, initially to make this meeting public. There are some who believe that it's sort of a way to embarrass the governor in public, to show that he doesn't know as much about state government as they do, that other than the canned proposals that we hear when he is giving the stump speeches, that he isn't really able to negotiate on things. Or maybe it's a way to force the issue again. The reform community really wants it focused on the budget versus the turnaround agenda. Does that play to Democrats' advantage? So there's a lot there. We'll all be watching, but even those who are organizing it admit, they say, we don't necessarily think this is going to bring about the solution, but it's at the very least a start.
It is the first way of a ball rolling. Whether it rolls far or not, I guess, will be determined. Well, another issue, doesn't necessarily directly affect most of our listeners to the show, but the city of Chicago this past week approved $755 million in new taxes and fees, and some of that designed to address some issues related to the pension system in the city of Chicago. But the governor and the mayor kind of spatting with each other, the mayor criticizing the governor on several fronts. Can you kind of give us an overview of that, Amanda?
Right. So this city of Chicago budget proposal brings a whole lot of pain to those residents, and that includes a major property tax hike, a extra surcharge for Uber, those ride shares. There will now be a monthly fee put on garbage. So really widespread, a whole lot of ways where Mayor Rahm Emanuel says that he's trying to address this municipal sickness. But where it does involve the state is that a whole lot of the city budget has some big asks from the legislature and the governor. There is an outstanding pension measure that passed the legislature, but it's on hold right now, not yet being sent to the governor because of all of this other stuff that is caught up. They didn't want to give it to Rauner for him to directly veto that. In some instances, depends on a Chicago casino. Their budget also for the city of Chicago factors in that the Chicago Public Schools will basically get $500 million from the state for its pension funds. Otherwise, at the start of the new year, a whole lot of teachers will be laid off. It also, in order for the city of Chicago's property tax increase to what the advocates of the plan say protect the lower income families, would ask for a homestead exemption from the state for homes that are so to relieve the pain for those homes that are worth $250,000 or less, that needs to be approved by the state legislature. So there's a whole lot of ask there, and it gets into this whole game of pressure. And the governor has said publicly that he believes perhaps that all of this weight on Chicago legislators, Democrats really, will turn them to be more willing to see his light on the turnaround agenda in order to do this for their city, to get those asks passed.
So, Amanda, then you're saying that there are points in this budget that if it really is to take effect and work, depend upon the state capitol.
Very much so. And so there is going to be a timeline for that, the start of the new year at the very least. And really, it gets back to the pressure. What will change legislators' minds? What will force an agreement?
And I think it's I do want to pay special attention to what we heard the governor saying this week about Chicago, what he's been saying for a long time. He actually went and addressed the Chicago City Council this year, where he says, you know, they're not embracing quote unquote reforms. That's the term he uses. And what that really means is taking things out of collective bargaining, or at least that's a significant stumbling block. That's something he wants to happen that Democrats are really objecting to. And I do think it's interesting if you just consider that he has said all along, he said earlier this year to the Chicago Tribune editorial board that crisis creates opportunity. We have to leverage crisis. And this is just another example of the governor saying, you know, you want my help, you want to improve things, you have to take these agenda items that under normal circumstances Democrats would never, ever go along with. And Democrats are even saying now, even under these extreme circumstances, even under these crisis, financial crisis circumstances, we're still not going to go along with these proposals. And that really, I think, is the heart of why we have this impasse, is because the governor is pushing, as we've said, these proposals that are, you know, would really change collective bargaining at the local level. The governor says that he is not actually want to eliminate collective bargaining or change collective bargaining, that he just wants to allow local governments manage how they deal with these issues. He's often very vague on this point. But basically what he wants to do is let local governments change collective bargaining and take it so that unions can't negotiate over wages, benefits, things like that.
We'll spend a minute or so now discussing nuclear energy, actually, and state policy. And already items are building up that would appear on the spring legislative agenda. Amanda Venicky, Exelon, which owns the nuke plants around the state, has said, we'll wait a year or so before we decide whether one in downstate Clinton will close or not. Right now, that's not unprofitable for us, but the legislature sure could help us level the playing field. Although you're not optimistic that Exelon will be able to get a lot through the General Assembly in the coming year.
So much really, I think, depends on the budget situation. Legislators would be hard-pressed to, I think, perhaps pass a measure that would add to voters, residents, utility bills at the same time as who knows if there could be a tax increase or if there's a whole lot of pain. So that held up. This is something that the Exelon had made an ask of the General Assembly last session, and it is expected to pop back up again. It comes at the same time as we have the Obama administration's Clean Power Act and also a big push from the renewable energy community, kind of the environmental groups, for changes in their standards. So Exelon had said a couple months ago that they were going to hold off on threatened closure of another couple of power plants in, you know, the Quad Cities, for example. But now they've said the same with Clinton. So it is very much, again, a matter of pressure in politics. So Exelon is expected to come back and make that ask. But with all the other things going on, they right now are not jumping to the top of the fray. Of course, they have a whole lot of money that they can contribute and have contributed in the past to legislators on both sides. Nothing that would be able to trump the governor's money that he is expected to put into Republican races, but nonetheless making them a big player.
Now we're going to get some notes from the field, so I'm going to throw the volleyball or volley it right back to you, Amanda, for the first one.
All right. As this will air on Halloween, just wanted to give a shout out, of course, to the pumpkin that is fueling all of those pumpkin spice lattes and other things. Most of those pumpkins grown in Illinois and Morton. And also from a news perspective, the Illinois High School Association, which basically governs prep sports in the state, had been sued, saying a former athlete saying that the IHSA didn't do enough to protect football players after he'd suffered concussions. That suit thrown out by a Cook County Circuit Court judge.
And I'm going to throw an addendum to your thank you to the pumpkin. Really, I think it's corn that should be thanked for all of those special little pumpkin flavors, because most of it is corn syrup from probably the state of Illinois. Brian Mackey.
Yeah, we got word this week. The Chicago Tribune reported that the Illinois Department of Corrections has to return 5 semi-trucks to a company that had been leasing to the state for about 5 years now. The company is called the Larson Group. They decided to walk away from their contract a year before it expired because it says the state owes them more than $17,000. One can only imagine that we're just going to hear more and more companies that do business with the state decide it's just not financially worth it, as the state is not paying with no end in sight.
Charlie Wheeler.
And I think we should also note with a degree of sadness, I would say, that former U.S. House Speaker Dennis Hastert appeared in federal court this week to plead guilty to a couple charges dealing with improper withdrawals from banks and lying to federal agents investigating that. And it was part of a plea deal, which could wind up with the former speaker being given probation or being sentenced to multiple years in prison. But the unanswered and probably not to be answered question is, what in the speaker's background was so, what would you say, so horrible that he was willing to pay millions of dollars to hush it up and that he's willing to go to prison rather than have it appear in open court?
And he'll be sentenced in late February. Also, a prison watchdog group out this week says the state's hiring process for the prison system is cumbersome and needs to be streamlined. And I guess it was streamlined, I think, back to the Jim Thompson years. And to get a job, as they were building tons of new prisons at the time, you had to have permission and approval from the Republican county chairman at that time. So things go back and forth, Charlie.
And that's true. But under the Rutan decision that came at the end of Thompson's administration, those kind of political considerations no longer are part of determining hiring, or so they say.
That's our time for this edition of State Week. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. Thanks for double duty production work from Brian Mackey. I'm Bill Wheelhouse.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.